Welcome back to It Starts With You podcast with me, Mark Hopkins. And if you are a recruiter at this moment in time that's thinking of starting up and you are considering getting a website done, where'd you go? Who'd you speak to? Where'd you get advice from? Who can do it for you? Then go no further than Darren Revelle at Recruiter Web. We talk about a hell of a lot of stuff in this podcast, actually, quite a lot of stuff about recruitment websites and his thoughts and his ideas. And what we should be doing as recruiters and what we should have or what we shouldn't have. So it's a really good, thorough, kind of technical podcast for the people out there that are really considering getting a website done. I really hope you enjoy this one, and I'll see you on the other side. Hey, Darren, how you doing, mate?
I'm very good, sir. And how are you?
I'm good. So pleased to have you on my podcast at last. For the audience, tell everyone a little bit about yourself. Who are you? What do you do? What's your business about?
So my name is Darren Revelle. I run currently Recruiter Web, which is a business aimed at helping recruiters with their recruitment website presence and their recruitment marketing strategy based around their recruitment website. Yeah. I'm ex-industry. I was a recruiter myself, manager of recruiters, eventually owner of a recruitment business, and a recruitment training company. So I'm kind of jack of all trades, average at some.
I think we all are, at the end of the day, we're all jack of some trade, especially in recruitment. We're all a little bit of a mishmash of everything, aren't we, in recruitment? So you do websites as the mainstay of your business and marketing as a sideline, or is that kind of all encompassed into one kind of lump?
So my approach to websites is that, obviously people want different things from their websites. They, you know, some people want a brochure, some people want a highly interactive branded experience, which tells a, you know, Emperor's New Clothes type journey, as I call it, where maybe much style and not enough substance. And we will work with anybody on any terms, you know, be they want to be a brochure wearer or be they want to work on the Emperor's New Clothes. But when they do come along with Emperor's New Clothes, I think we tend to try to steer them into the practical as well. So our customer base is very eclectic. It's, you know, we've got customers in all continents. We've got customers from one person recruiters all the way up to 350 person recruiters. We don't go near the big names, the high street names, the Adecos, the Hays, these types of companies. Yeah. They tend to have stuff in-house, or they tend to levitate towards very noisy vendors, shall I call them that? And that's not I like working with people like yourself. You know, you and I have had a long history of chatting about websites, and actually a lot of the relationships I've got, I didn't even provide the website. People just ask me questions and I'll give them an answer free of charge, no obligation.
I think that's the way to be. I think it's the same with my line of business. People come to me asking me where's the best place to advertise, and I'll tell them where the best place to advertise is, and they come back afterwards. But you just create this is that kind of creating that imaginary funnel that they talk about in sales, but it's the more, in my humble opinion, the modern way of doing it, where you know you're demonstrating capability and people are buying into what you do way before you've done anything. And I think that's really important today, other than some of the sales approaches that you seem to get on LinkedIn, which is just, you know, link with you and then suddenly sell to you with a 6-page message. You know what I mean?
I think I'm lucky in as much that because I own my business, I don't target myself. So I'm not like a salesperson in somebody else's business.
Yeah.
And I feel sorry for the salespeople in somebody else's business. My competitors that own their businesses and the owner pitches to you, that's one thing. But if when you get over a certain size, some of my competitors just have salespeople pitching. And the salespeople are forced to sell a story, whereas I'm able to just tell people whether our service works for them or not. And I do turn people away in a nice way by saying we're not the right vendor for you.
Yeah.
A lot of startups, you know, I say to them, well, unless you could put jobs on the website, for argument's sake, there's no point in you having a recruitment website. You'd be paying for functionality, for vanity, not sanity, you know.
Yeah.
Really good stuff in Wix, in WordPress, and Braco, these types of tools. So yeah, I think it's about giving an honest service and saying, you know, we can work with every recruitment company, but clearly We can't, because I mean, the last time we downloaded all of the recruitment companies from Companies House, there was over 39,000 of them, and we couldn't serve 39,000 recruitment companies.
So, yeah,
it's nice that a steady flow comes, but we couldn't have them all here at once. So.
I think also as well, you gotta really work out what your market is, and especially with, you know, my kind of world, and I'm sure it's with your world as well. You'll have a group of recruiters that you'll want to pitch to, so that figure out of the 39,000 will probably not even be 500 to 1,000, and then you've got to, like, that's kind of your core audience, and that's what you will go after. Is that how you see it, or do you look at it in a different way, and it doesn't matter? Yeah.
I think, you know, you have to be realistic. I mean, at the size we are, we could probably cope with about 500 customers globally.
There we go, yeah.
Or we need to grow. And then you have to question whether growth is, you know, are you creating growth for vanity's sake, or are you creating growth for sanity's sake? And I've seen that a lot in my lifetime in terms of, you know, with recruitment companies, the same. When I was working as a recruiter, or when I was working, you know, as a manager in recruitment companies, and say, well, you know, we need to open a new desk in this area. And it's like, are we opening that desk for vanity's sake, or are we opening it for sanity's sake? And that was it. The best time I really learned about the recruitment industry is when I went on the road and was a commercial recruitment industry trainer for 4 years.
Yeah.
You know, I saw like 3,000 recruitment firms who all wanted to open a legal desk, and there was only 80,000 lawyers firms at the time. It's like, well, how does 3,000 recruitment desks serve 80,000 legal firms?
Oh, mate, I've been here. I remember working for a company, and I was doing aerospace and defence, and they wanted me to go down the defence route for recruitment. I printed out like all the defence companies in the UK that we could work with. I think it was like 4,000 or 5,000 at the time. And I said, there we go. That's me done for the year. Then we're business development, because there's no freaking other companies to go after. So you've got to have a stroke of reality to that at the same time. But yeah, that's interesting. Why are they doing legal desks then? Was there something illegal that they wanted to do?
I think, like, legal, you know, in life we're assured taxes and death, they say, but I think we're also assured legality as well. So, you know, the legal industry is ever present, isn't it? So I think it's a staple. You know, right now, going back to, you know, another way of answering your question is, I looked it up the other day when, because I was thinking, like, it was a couple of thousand niches, and there's like 12,000 niches.
Yeah.
Down all of the job titles and job functions and stuff.
It's extraordinary, isn't it? I mean, I'm not a big fan of being too vertical in a market. I like to have a bit of general in the background, but then you tend to find yourself sitting in verticals. That's the only thing. And that comes from a lot of recruitment startups, comes from the fact they were verticalized by their company, but they did well. And then you hit a market like this, and then suddenly you've got no floor to your market, and going vertical might have been a bad idea.
Well, I think you can, if you can recruit, you can recruit. So, you know, you're a business operator, so it makes sense for you to not have all your eggs in one niche.
Even if
that can weather all financial marketplaces, legal can weather all financial marketplaces. Sure, there will be, you know, lawyers on furlough, but I wouldn't imagine it would be very many. I could be completely wrong on that, but yeah, I mean, if you can recruit, you can recruit. The general, you know, rule of thumb is some niches force you out of them.
Like, yes.
When I started in recruitment, I was I was doing IT recruitment, and I was introduced to it by industry legends, Mike O'Flynn, and he came from the same sort of background as the people that started the S3 Group, which is, you know, I think a half a billion recruitment company in technology and stuff like that. But I got trained by industry legends in a very well practiced methodology, which was to go after vertical markets. And I was given Novell NetWare. And at the time, there was a lot of old IBM, COBOL kits, DB2, AS400, mid-range technology in banks.
Yeah.
Well, you know, today the PC exists. I'm sure AS400 still exists somewhere in the four corners of the universe. But if you were trying to build a recruitment desk now out of the AS400 niche, you'd be kind of stuffed. Whereas In 1993, you could build a desk out of AS400 and live off of that desk quite comfortably.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, my first year in recruitment, I didn't make any sales for the first 3 months. And I was thinking I was going to get fired every other day. And then something clicked. And I was introduced to candidate marketing. And I started marketing candidates instead of looking for jobs. And I did 350,000 in placement fees in the next 9 months.
That's the thing. I fire myself every day, though, if I'm honest with you, mate. Moving into websites then. So when you get a criteria from a recruiter and kind of, you know, go through it with them, do you think that some recruitment companies just don't really need a website, or is does everyone need a website? What's your kind of perspective?
No, everyone doesn't need a website. There are clearly types of recruitment that you can do and never need a website. I mean, I think that lends itself more to the executive search networking side of thing than it does the plain agency model. I think there is an expectation with the plain agency model that you will have a website. But I think the more search orientated you are, and certainly if it's one of those sectors that's well served by LinkedIn, then you know your LinkedIn presence could easily be good enough. I mean, headhunters are famous because headhunters are famous.
Yeah.
You know, and again, I think it's about your model. You know, if you're sitting there right now thinking, should you start your own recruitment company, and you're going to go in the search model, then probably you don't need a website for the first year, 18 months of your existence. Or if you did, you could have quite an eloquent website coming soon type message.
A landing page of some sort, isn't it? Just with enough information so they can contact you or send you a quick message or something.
But like Reg123 will, when you buy a domain name, you'll get like a free website service at the moment. So,
that's good.
But I think sorry, mate, go on here.
So I was going to say, that's really good that you've got a lot of these kind of websites where you can just register your name, get a free page, but it only serves a small purpose, doesn't it, when they do that? Because when they start adding to those pages, it gets quite cumbersome, doesn't it, to like RegEdit and Wix and those type of places.
Yeah, I mean, again, it's about a time and motion thing. You know, if you're in startup phase and you're desperate to get the money through the door as quickly as possible, then obviously spending 6 hours watching YouTube tutorials on how to build a Wix website might not be high on your priority list. And a lot of the times what I hear is people go, I'm not technical. And I think a lot of the time I spend debunking that myth that websites are technical. A lot of them are just point and squirt things. They're no more complicated. But I think going back to, you know, I'm the turkey voting, you know, not good voting, but yeah, I think, you know, there is the core marketplace would expect you to, you know, if your agency model, they'd expect you to have a recruitment website. But I think the tipping point for me is what you're going to do with your jobs.
I agree with that. I totally agree with that. And I was just going to bring that up because every single, I would say, recruitment company will have jobs on. Some of them will advertise in various places. And if you've got a CRM, some CRMs advertise on their own little microsite for you, which you can set up as an RSS feed and chuck in a MailChimp and it can send to your clients and to your candidates and whatnot. But there's, you know, someone's going to search for you and look for you, and then they're going to want to see what you do. And most jobs advertised, I find, are viewed by clients, not just by candidates. So they want to see what you do. So it's a showcase, almost, the jobs that you're advertising. I totally agree with you. You know, you need to have a demonstration of capability somewhere. And LinkedIn is too fast flowing, in my humble opinion, for that.
Yeah, and I also think it depends on, like, I get different kinds of people approach me from different sources. So if they've seen one of our websites that we've already built, then they're more or less of the mindset that RecruiterWeb is the right vendor for them because they've seen something that they like.
Yeah.
That's a bit, you know, shopping for websites is a bit like shopping for cars. You know, you go to a car supermarket, look around, and there's, you know, it's 45 Ford Focuses there, but you like the one that's in this particular color of silver. You know, there's 44 other Ford Focuses sitting there next to them. So a lot of people make their decision based on visuals. And actually, that's quite frustrating from the web designer's point of view, because the visual part of the website is the easiest thing.
Really? No, I didn't know that.
Yeah, I mean, again, you know, going back to it, there's 30,000 templates that you could download and manipulate to make design. So the biggest frustration is people look in your portfolio and they go, they don't see a website they like. They make an assumption that you're not the kind of vendor that can make it for them because they haven't seen something they liked. Whereas actually getting you something you like is as easy as falling off a log if you just tell the web designer what you like.
Yeah.
But other customers, the kind of customer that makes an inquiry to me that's spoken to four or five of my competitors, and this I'm very open about my feelings about my competitors, half of them don't like me and half of them don't know me. So, you know, my goal in life is to get the others not to like me. Typically, if they come to me from one of my competitors, then they'll be all excited about SEO, because the typical thing they get told by my competitors is, oh, they're going to get this miracle cure take place.
Yeah.
And their jobs are some, you know, you're a one person recruiter doing legal, we'll stick with legal recruitment. You're a one person doing a legal recruitment in Warrington. And suddenly you're going to outrank Reed, Total Jobs, Indeed, Google for Jobs, because you put your legal jobs on Acme Recruiter website platform. And I spend 3/4 of my time trying to debunk myths that have created that, you know, SEO is not as easy as that, because if it was,
everyone would be able to be on the first few pages, you know what I mean? It's extraordinary. I find SEO as well, it's a bit like voodoo, isn't it? Sometimes you can get it just right, but you have to pay a shitload of money for that though, don't you?
Well, here's the thing with you can SEO is if you don't know football, I'm not a football aficionado, I'm more rugby, but you know, you can play, you know, if you're Chelsea and you play Liverpool away and Liverpool beat you, and then you can play Liverpool at home and you beat Liverpool at home. And it could be the same squad on both occasions, you know, playing this flat back four, Christmas tree four formation, or all of that type of stuff. Yeah. And that's the problem with SEO. SEO has the same issues. That you could actually run two identical websites, run an identical SEO strategy for them, and one will win and one won't. And there are 250 recognized things that constitute search engine optimization in the search engine optimization geek world.
Yeah.
And this is the bit, you know, if you phone me and you've spoken to one of my competitors, this is the first thing I'm going to tell you. It's, well, 250 things that constitute search engine optimization. Your website can do like 9, 10, or 11 of those things. So again, just for my dyslexia, if we stick with round maths, you know, if your website can do 10 of the things that constitute search engine optimization, by default, it means 240 things can't. So the largest effect that you can have has nothing to do with your website.
Yeah, so and that's the thing. And no website will be ticking all the boxes of everything that the SEO needs to have to bring you up to the first page. Most of them will be paid for, won't they? Most people to get on the first page of Google searches is probably because you put a large sum of money into it.
You're absolutely right, and that's where you find out that those 240 other things that you need to do cost an absolute fortune.
Yes.
Depending on how you do them. Like, it's all about links at the end of the day. As much as Google has, you know, chased the link dragon, as it were, for the last 20 years, it's still about links, despite what anyone says. You know, of those 240 other strategies, I think 200 of them are all link-related strategies. So, but you will get companies out there now. When I very first started doing search engine optimization in 2004, you could have a link budget of, you know, £500 a month for the biggest project.
Yeah,
you know, that'd be £500 a week now.
God, and that's just going up and up and up, isn't it? Really, that figure. I get approached by so many SEO companies via email and the odd call. Not as many as there used to be. Years ago, I used to get a lot of calls. And that figure was, you know, 5-6 grand to get on the front page of engineering recruitment, for instance. It was, and that's up against the biggest boys in the country as well. Yeah, it's quite.
You also have to break SEO down into what it really is. I mean, I try to spend as much time as I can, again, normalizing the language, because really all it is, you know, recruiters can understand search engine optimization because they've gone to their recruitment software and run a search in it for a candidate at some point.
Yeah.
Searching Google themselves. Now, if you're trying to be found for legal jobs, that's where you're going to spend stupid amounts of money to get into the top rankings. But if you are going to be looking to find, you know, to be found for family law jobs, you know, 3 years qualified in Warrington,
yeah,
or near Warrington, we have something in the SEO world called, you know, where SEOs define the kind of search that somebody's made, whether it's a one word search, two word search, three word search, 5-10 word search.
Yeah.
If it's a one or two word search that it clearly defines what it, you know, a very wide generic search like legal jobs, that would be considered a head term search.
Yeah.
By the time you're searching for, family law jobs near Warrington, permanent.
It's quite a defined search. Yeah.
Very refined, very derivatized, very specific, and that's called long tail SEO. Now, you won't need to spend thousands and thousands and thousands to get long tail SEO working on your websites. You just need to have the right website platform that's been set up to exploit long tail SEO.
This is very similar to if you want your YouTube videos being spotted, you answer questions in the tags. You don't put legal and then hashtag Warrington. You answer legal jobs in Warrington advice, or how to get a legal job in Warrington. Do you know what I mean? You answer specific questions in the tags, and SEO is very similar to that, isn't it? If you want to be recognised for specifics like that, would you say?
Yeah, exactly. And I think also as well, you've got to think about we're going back to the 10 things that you can do with your website. Think about using a car wash. Okay, so you've got the family car, you haven't got time, it's Sunday morning, you're under pressure, maybe you've got to take the wee one to football, rugby, you know, taekwondo, whatever it is. So you go to the Shell petrol station and you go to one of those old-fashioned automated car washes, you know, the ones you drive through, sit, sprays the foam over you and the big rollers come over and all that. When you park the car in the car park, you know, and the wee one runs off to play rugby, as you walk around the car, you will find various places that there's still dirt on the car.
Yes. Every time, mate. Every time. Even when you go to the guys that do it, you still find patches as well.
Now again, if you go to the hand car wash, then they get a little bit better. And then there's the detailed car wash that you can do yourself, or then you can go to the very top of the range and spend £80 on getting a detailed wash, or spend £3,000 getting the car detailed, God forbid, for £5.
Yeah, and they come out with a clay bar and they just sit there for 2 hours with I know the one, Darren. I know the one.
Right. So now I would liken that same principle to your website. And I'll give you a very simple example. Most recruitment websites on them have a testimonial facility.
Yes.
So on most testimonials I read, it says, oh, you know, Bob did a really good job for me and I was really pleased and they're a really great person. I have no hesitation in recommending. That's it. Okay. The £3,000 detail, that's going through the, you know, £3.50 automatic Shell car wash, partly washing your car. At the other end of the scale would be, if I were making that testimonial with my SEO hat on, I would put some narrative in there myself as the recruitment consultant. And I would say, I placed Bob after a contingency search for this client. You know, if it's an aerospace client or if it's the legal client. And I did, paid search using Google. I use Google for jobs. I use my existing network, blah, blah. And I would write in there some recruitment linguistics that would go with the kind of linguistics that somebody would be searching for. Yeah. Then I would have a link in there to my profile, so as they could come to my actual team member page. And then I would maybe have links in that testimonial to the latest jobs that I got and these kind of things. Now, when Google came and crawled that page, instead of just reading like 60, 70 words about Bob and how happy he is, it would see those words. It would see some additional keywords that go with recruitment-related matters. And yeah. then it will crawl down the link to your profile page. And on your profile page, it will tell you all about you. And it will have all the jobs that you've got live if you've got the right system in place.
Is this called backlinking? Is this what this is about? Is it backlinking?
It's internal linking. So when Google yeah. comes to your website, goes on a journey, one of the ways that you can incentivize it to get around your website quickly and index all pages is to provide on-page links to other pages on your website. And the example there is, as I say, you can just actually flesh out that testimonial page to be more than the sum of its parts.
Yeah.
But most of us are thinking in recruiter mode when we, you know, I used to be like this when I very first started. Because we're still in recruiter mode, we're thinking, well, you know, somebody's given me a referral, people would like to know that I've been referred, I'll put that referral on. In SEO mode, you would be thinking, well, how many other ways can I tell Google this page is about how successful I am as a recruitment business? So, you know, by sending it off to other parts of your page and linking other parts of the website in that might have valuable data for Google, and Google will crawl those internal links. There is something called overlinking, which you can get a penalty for, but I mean, no recruiters would go anywhere near those penalties because they're not looking to spam the page, so they'd be fine.
It's also producing content on a regular basis a good thing for Google as well. So that means the page is live, isn't it? So you're constantly informing Google that someone is actively working on this page. Is that a good thing?
Yeah, and again, I think you know, research is everything. Because going back to the football game, if Chelsea have played Liverpool and beat them away, and then lost to them at home, then there will be a forensic analysis of that game after the event, right?
Yeah.
And it's the same thing with these statements. More content generally does mean that Google will give the website, you know, more rating. But provided that content has some value, and that content is seem to be sort of interacted with. You know, it's like if you just produce a blog that never gets any traffic, then Google wouldn't rate the fact that you made 50 blogs with no traffic better than a blog that made 200 site with 5. So that's why it's important to distribute your content, you know, to your social touch points. If you are going to write a blog on your website, it should go on your LinkedIn channel, it should go on your Facebook channel, it should go on your Twitter channel, it should go on your Instagram, it should go at the footer of your emails, it should go in mail shots. You want to stimulate getting people to your website.
But with going back to SEO, with all that though, with everything you do with SEO, it's still important to have a go at it anyway, even if you're not going to be in the first page of Google. So it's still worth playing with it, isn't it? But you don't need to pay someone for it. Is that right? Is that a right assessment? Or it's up to you?
I think ultimately, yes, you will need to pay for some form of SEO. But unless you're actually an SEO company, you wouldn't have all of the staff and all of the tools and all of the skills available to do it all of the time. Otherwise, you would be an SEO worker, not a recruiter. When you do elect to pay for something, the SEO company should be able to give you a detailed understanding of what it is that you're paying for. And again, I'll use a different metaphor. If you paid a general builder to build your house, so you got some plan, the architect makes the drawings, the builder puts them. Now, you would likely want the builder to maybe have their own plumbers, have their own carpenters, have their own electricians, and so on and so forth. When you've got your bill at the end of it, or you know, your estimate, you would want to know how much of your house build was on bricks,
yeah.
how much of it was roof tiles, how much of it was on cable for the electrician and stuff. Now, the biggest scam, if you like, in the SEO industry is the SEO industry largely existed in the early days without ever being accountable for any of those things. So we just say, oh, it's a dark art, leave it to us, we'll get you up the rankings. Every time I've been doing this since SEO since 2004. Every single time I've been asked to look at an SEO campaign where somebody spent money and it didn't achieve what they thought it was going to be achieve or what they were told it was going to achieve, I asked for the report on what the money was being spent on, and I've never met a client that could tell me.
Really? Wow. That would be the first question I ask.
Well, again, you know, whenever we do SEO, we say, right, okay, well, we bought you 50 links this month. We by links, I mean, obviously, Google says about don't pay for links. That, you know, everyone pays for links. It's just it's the way you pay for the links, whether you get the penalty or not. So, like, for argument's sake, I'm showing my age here, but, you know, Delia Smith whenever Delia Smith used to do a TV program and she had a new egg cutting device, the egg cutting device would sell out in the shops 2 days later.
Yeah.
People used to try to get product placement in front of Delia, and they do it with Jamie Oliver, and they'll do it with Gordon Ramsay, and, you know, Gino, all of the latest chefs and stuff. So, there are blog writers out there that if you can get a mention on their blogs, they've got the audience and they've got the followers, to get you very, very real traffic. But increasingly, they're charging for 150 quid, 250 quid to place you in their blog.
Yeah, so, and this is where the dodgy ones from Fiverr.com come into this, where you pay them a couple of quid to do backlinks, and then they go around half of India's websites and put your website address into comment sections of various blogs, or, you know what I mean? They put them in places, and I've had to shut down the comments on my own website because of a cannabis oil company in America. I was trying to backlink to every single one of my comments. But obviously there's a filter and you can spam it before you can post it. But I've had to shut it down because it was a moment in the for the whole of January this year where every day they would comment on every single one of my posts on my website. So I had to shut down all the comment section because of it. It's mental. It's absolutely mental.
Yeah, so I mean, there is SEO worth buying. There are SEO services worth buying, but you wouldn't give £70 to somebody to go to Tesco's for you to do a weekly shop.
Yeah, yeah.
And just accept whatever they brought back.
Yeah, although that's if you do the order online. That's sometimes what happens, though.
Even then, the poor guy that's standing at your front door says, "Well, you know, I've substituted your cocoa butter for, Mrs. Pitt's own brand butter or something like that." I mean, at least there's a substitute. But as I say, most SEO companies will try to avoid, like, the plague giving you that, because I come back to where I started. You can run an identical SEO campaign for two identical sites, and one will rank and one won't. So, keep in mind this, right? There's a famous quote about Larry Page and where PageRank comes from. Larry Page is one of the co-founders of Google, and where PageRank comes from is Larry's name, Page. And somebody said to him, I think 4 or 5 years ago or 6 years ago, the quote was, Larry, can you give us any advice on the Google algorithm? He was like, I've got 3,000 PhDs that work for me. Now I'm not allowed anywhere near the algorithm and haven't been for a number of years. All SEO is backward looking.
Yes.
And if you really want to, the best SEOs are the ones who read white papers. Google puts out lots of white papers. And they read those white papers and try to interpret from those white papers what direction Google's going to be taking, the futurists, if you like.
Yeah, yeah. And they're extremely important because I've read a few articles, not white papers, articles that have probably reviewed the white papers. And they change the way I market on social media because of reading them. And it wasn't because I was following other people on it. I found that some stuff that they produce really does make you think and make you realize that, that's why people are buying that way. Well, that's why people are looking at my website, because it has this, this, and this, and this is what people are looking for. And believe it or not, you take that theory out of the website world and put it in social media world, it works there as well, believe it or not.
I think the other thing is have people warranty the advice with some form of some form of guarantee or money back. I mean, the SEO, when we now go to a third, because even some of the SEO work that we do for customers, we buy in that expertise. But the companies that we go to, I mean, I'll give you, Linkology is a great company, and they will give you a guarantee that if it doesn't work, they'll give you your money back.
Wow, really? Oh, that's good. Because like we were saying, a couple of years ago, companies approached me, £250 a month on SEO, and there's zero guarantees it was going to work. And they would say that on the phone call. Oh, no, we can't guarantee it works, but you give you it's £250, and we'll have a go. It's like, that's a lot of money for a small business. Yeah. With regards to kind of where you sit now in 2020 with websites, has much changed since 2004, as in what your customers are demanding or what they would like the websites to do? Or has it pretty much been the same kind of feel for them the last 20 plus years? 10 plus years, sorry.
Yeah, websites don't really change very much in as much that, you know, obviously the core principle to a recruitment website is to serve candidates jobs and to serve them other information that will be valuable to them. So, you know, things like salary survey tools and all of this type of stuff. But increasing, I mean, mobile made a big difference because the mobile shift just made websites easier to use on a phone. That was a big shift. But in terms of, it's normal, it's business as usual. I mean, it's more to do with, you know, like 20 years ago, you wouldn't see a lot of, when I was a salesperson prior to coming into recruitment, before you'd hit target, you would be given a choice of a white car or a red car because white and red were free paint colours, right? And they weren't seen as premium. So you knew you were the better salesperson just by what colour your car was in the car park. If you'd hit target, then you could choose a silver one type of thing, which was a premium colour to buy.
Yeah.
And, you know, over the last 10 years, I can't count the amount of white Audis that I've seen. And white suddenly become a prestige colour. So it's more look and feel changes that have happened in that period than core functional. Well, you know, recruitment website that still have job searches that they had in 2004. They still have salary survey tools that they had in 2004. They still have the ability for you to advertise your client's name on them as they did in 2004. But in 2004, they might have looked quite boxy. With lots of white space either side and not fitting, you know, 17-inch screens wouldn't have fitted very well, and 20-inch screens, they wouldn't have, the website would have been stuck in the middle of a 20-inch screen, very small. It's the look and feel of them that's changed. In the same way that, you know, I look back, I'm 52, so I'm a child of the 70s, and, you know, I had flares.
Yeah, that makes sense, doesn't it? Because then, yeah, the look of it, the functionality would be the same. What about things like we're now in the world of video and in the world of podcasts and you know, basically people generating more content these days. Is that what's the biggest addition to the website, or is that still neither here nor there for some of these companies?
I wish. I mean, I wish people would use more video. I wish people would use more podcasts. I wish people would put more rich media into their websites. Because, again, simple stuff. You know, however long this podcast goes on for, the majority of your listeners will listen to it. Not for me, because they're here for your questions. But, you know, The podcast keeps people's attention for 30 minutes, 40 minutes, 50 minutes, an hour. Write something written on the page will keep that person's attention for 60 seconds if you're lucky.
Yeah.
The podcasting, you know, I'd love to see more podcasts being put onto people's websites. So their blog feature would be more of like a blog vlog, and their podcast would be advertised there. And again, you know, video descriptions of jobs, the passion that somebody has. I mean, I absolutely love the recruitment industry. I am a recruitment nerd. You know, I still, in the back of my mind, think of myself, you know, a bit like a retired rugby player. well, I could still do it type of thing. You know, I still like, I love the industry, the recruitment industry, which is why I stuck around it for so long. And I think, you know, if you do video presentations of your jobs, if you do video presentations of your candidates, we got a feature on a recruiter website. I suppose I should pitch some of our features. called Candidate and the Candidate Champion feature allows your customers to search your candidate base as if the same as a candidate can search for jobs, the employers can search your candidate base. And again, they can set up candidate alerts. So if they're always looking for, you know, certain kind of aerospace engineer, they can set up alert the next time one of those candidates lands on your Candidate Champion feature, it will alert them that that candidate is available. And I'd like to see that being used with a video presentation of the candidate by the recruiter.
Wow, that's a powerful tool. That is a real powerful tool.
But yeah, I think the content, I mean, I think you answered your own question because you're all powerful, but the content that you put on website is the difference. In 2004, nobody would have been thinking about video, largely because we'd been thinking, you know, shit, how do we make this really heavy file run with the bandwidth we've got? But yeah, now bandwidth hopefully won't be so much of a problem. So definitely content, look and feel of website changes them. Content changes personality of a website. I mean, if you put a picture of a dog with a red nose on a website versus a black and white picture of, you know, accountants sitting in front of computers, it will completely change the personality.
Yes.
If you've got a flat vacancy, which is, you know, 1,000 words, our client will this, our client will that, you will this, you will that. I mean, you know, Mitch Sullivan and his followers have got a very strong handle on how to make very boring jobs very attractive. But I still think the most attractive way you ever hear of a job is when somebody sells you the job over the telephone or when they sell you the job face to face. They don't read out the job spec. Our client will want you to do this. Our client will want you to do that. You will have this. You will have that. You know, you'd be sitting there trying to infuse, trying to espouse the qualities of your client, trying to, you know, well, this client's this and this client's that and this client's that. So I think video certainly should have a big, much bigger play than it's currently getting. And if people understood how easy it was, again, most websites, you just start your YouTube channel, bang all your videos on your YouTube channel, which is a double win for the SEO because you get the links back from YouTube channel. That helps create a link, a trusted link profile for Google. So that will help. And the video player will get you past all bandwidth issues and all of that type of stuff.
Yes, this is it. And then the longer they're on your website for, Google recognizes that as well, and that's a good thing for your SEO and your website in general, isn't it?
And you'll get better at speaking as well. I mean, I'm new to this stuff. Most of my stuff has been written. I've done 2 podcasts this year, and that's 2 more than I've done in 10 years. So you'll get better at this stuff, I'm sure. Don't measure yourself by your first ones. I'm sure you're the expert on that. You know how you've evolved.
It's weird. It does evolve. And then some days you kind of think, this is a lot of work, and it is a lot of work to produce in the podcast, but it's about longevity and it's about forward thinking, because your first video, your first podcast, or your first kind of anything in this, your first website even, is you don't normally, it doesn't normally do anything straight away. It takes time for it to build up, and then when it builds, it, you know, it's a bit like the coronavirus. It compounds very quickly, and then suddenly you've got a lot of people infected by it. And it's the same thing with podcasts and video and websites and stuff like that. So it takes time to build. So you've got to invest the time in now. It's a long game, I think, personally.
Yeah, which I think also fits well with good general marketing strategy. I mean, I've always done new business. You know, I've never really developed major accounts. So I've always preferred being the first person through the door and that type of thing. And I've always tried to set up selling strategies that would have a short-term, medium-term, and long-term impact on sales. You know, short-term, I could make 50 phone calls today and probably come across a website lead. Whereas if I write a blog on LinkedIn, I might benefit from that in 18 months, 2 years time. Actually, as a perfect example, I'm still getting website orders from somebody who read a post I made about GDPR and how it would affect recruiters 2 years ago.
Wow. So there we go. And it's that type of thing that you invest time in. Do you know, I used to have managers, sorry, I just smacked my microphone then. I used to have managers used to tell me, why am I wasting my time writing blogs? And blogs, before I did video and before I did podcasts, were one of my biggest areas where clients would come and speak to me afterwards, more so than me doing cold calls. I know that sounds crazy, but cold calls were the comeback from them was reducing so much that I was more then focusing, and this is where then I started focusing on social media a lot more, because I saw this kind of direction that we needed to go with it. And it's all about demonstrating capability. And what Google called it, have you heard of this reference before? Google call it the zero moment of truth. So people are buying before they've actually spoken to you. And we do this today with TVs and videos, you know, and so forth. And so you're going to say something then, sorry, Dan.
You know, certainly. I think that's it's a really powerful observation and a really good recall by you to bring that up. The majority of people that bought websites from me, because I, you know, did like 9 months of intensive scrutiny and try this, try that, look out for this, look out for that. The majority of them bought websites for me, never commented on those original posts.
It's interesting. Who's really reading?
I got orders from people who commented on the posts. But I got more orders from people who just read the post, didn't comment, and banked them in their memory for a rainy day type of thing. So.
Yeah, that's it. It's a bit of a strange question, and I'm not sure if it's in your wheelhouse. It might be. With regards to marketing, I got a bit of feedback. Sorry, hang on a second. Let me just. With regards to marketing, do you find that a lot of recruitment websites are missing out on capturing candidates or clients as they hit the website with some sort of mailing list and stuff like that? I know GDPR side, because obviously you can tick boxes and whatnot, but are you finding that they're not capturing the audience and trying to resell to them in a mailing list?
I don't know that a mailing list is that valuable a feature on any website unless you've got concrete, high quality material that goes out the door after capturing that information. So my concern wouldn't be that you didn't have a lead capture system. I mean, everybody's all about funnels at this moment in time. Funnels, 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 funnels.
Yeah, this is where I'm going to. Yeah.
But funnels are only as good as the middle of the funnel. And the middle of the funnel is where you send them loads of interesting stuff. If you don't send them loads of interesting stuff, then your unsubscribe rate will be horrendous. So I think one of my competitors, I shan't name them, started off making recruitment websites and making corporate career sites and making job boards. And then they gave up on corporate career sites, and then they gave up on job boards and told all of their job board customers, sorry, you spent all this money with us, but we're not going to do job boards anymore. And now they've changed their strap line about 11 years after they started, 10 years after they started, say, they only make recruitment websites, so they should be the vendor of choice. And I think that directly relates to what I'm trying to say about content and mailing lists. You know, only accept or only take someone's email in if you've got something content worthy to send them. I'd be far more interested. I mean, we do really, really well with salary surveys.
Yeah.
And going back to, you know, marketing and subtle ways to keep your name in front of somebody. There's a brilliant book that I was given by one of my first sales trainers called Selling to Win by Richard Denny.
Yeah.
And he tells the story about how he was a farmer. Before he became a leading sales authority or sales trainer, he was a farmer. And he had this guy turn up who wanted to sell him cattle feed. And he was like, I'm happy with the cattle feed person that I've got. And the guy said, well, do you mind if I just call by, whenever I'm in the area type thing, once a month. And he said, fill your boots, call by as often as you like type thing. But anyway, this guy persisted and he, kept turning up every, sort of 1 month, 6 weeks, whatever. And just, as the Hollywood story goes, one time he turned up and Richard's cattle, some young cattle were feeding. And the guy said, well, look, why don't you try one of our samples free of charge? And of course, the sample free of charge worked. The cattle ate it, and then he ended up taking over the account and replacing the existing supplier. So I think if you are going to set up a marketing strategy where you capture information, then the information that you capture has one got to be as consistent as that salesperson was. You've got to turn up with information on a regular basis.
Yes.
And two, when you do turn up with information, you've got to turn up with information that, that struggling calf is going to eat. And if you don't do that, then you will damage your future marketing potential.
Yes, yes.
And salary surveys are a real win here, because going back to the Google search engine optimization, we know Google tells us some interesting stats. Like Google tells us that a third of all searches in their search engine are employment related. Now that will cover things like job searches, my employer's a racist, how do I deal with that, to what do I get paid?
Yeah.
And we know in the rankings that jobs is always top. But we also know that, pay and conditions usually are ranked third, fourth, or fifth.
Yeah.
Any 1 year. So you get a double win here. If you have an online salary survey tool where the person can get an instant gratification and say, put your details in, here you are, here's what we know, here's what you should be being paid. That's one thing. If they can subscribe to that and the website alerts them to salary advice every quarter, every half year, every year, the subtlety and the subtle branding of that. Because who doesn't, can you think of a time when you won't want to know whether you're being paid the right amount of money?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Yeah. And also that on top of that as well, if you add, this is from my experience, if you add questions, answering questions that people may have. And I went through this whole process. You probably saw some of the videos I did over the years. I actually went and looked for what people were asking about questions. How do I get my CV noticed? How do I get through an interview? All those kind of questions. And then produce content answering those questions as well. And that was the content that I used then to market to candidates and even to clients, especially if it's a client-based question as well. And that's, like you said, solid content going out regularly. It's fucking hard, really hard to do. But once you've done it, you can create an extraordinary mailing list. That's from my experience, though, but it does take a lot of time.
Well, I don't blow smoke, and I've followed you for quite some time, and I think you're a marketing genius. And I think the pearl of wisdom that you've just given there is phenomenal. People ask all the time, I'll make videos or I'll write blogs, but I don't really know what to write about. Well, just take the top 10 questions that you got asked that week from your candidates and do a weekly roundup. Like the old Don Far show, this week I've been mostly eating carrots.
That'd be a great feature, actually, thinking about it on any social media or website. This week I've been mostly answering this question and turn it into a show. It would be 2 minute video. It would be freaking fantastic. Oh, thank you for those kind words, by the way. No one's ever said I'm a marketing genius. I'm an evil genius at it, but no, I'm just, no one's ever said that. So thank you, Darren. That's really good. Really good. Thank you. Go on.
I was going to put in another little joke there. As a dyslexic, you don't actually know that I wasn't calling you a marketing Guinness.
That's true. That's true. Oh, God. That's one thing about websites, though, and kind of, there is no criteria, is there? There's methodologies that work, but you'll find in some websites don't do any of this and seem to do very well just being the brand name. Don't they really? And they don't need to add extra to it. The brand has sold the website. Does that make sense?
It does, but I think people again decry the work that's going on behind the under the surface. I mean, yeah. It's like they see the iceberg, but they don't actually see what's below the waterline. I mean, I'm not sure if I'm allowed to mention other people, but a guy that I really rate is a guy called Robert Woodford of the Marketing Junction.
Yeah.
Now, people meet Robert, and if he comes into your offices for half a day or a day, you only actually see that work. I mean, if people knew the amount of work that Robert was doing behind the scenes, I've never known a man work as many hours as that man on his projects.
Passion. It's called passion, I think. When you see someone work that hard for something, they're passionate about it. You know they're passionate about it.
So I think marketing often, you know, it looks easy because the person who's doing the marketing has made it look easy. But it's not necessarily as easy as that. And I also think other people, you know, again, you work really, really hard. You know that. You know the hours that you put into your videos. You know the hours that you're putting into your podcasts and so on and so forth. And I think, you know, we're all a little bit lazy. I mean, I'm probably the laziest person that I know. And, you know, it's the nature of us is to cut corners and try to get more quality time and stuff like that. But good marketing doesn't just happen. There's always going to be a core underlying. I mean, there's certainly, you can be at the forefront. You know, you can, something can blow up. Like I've had LinkedIn posts that have got like 55,000 views. And normally they're jokey type posts. You know, write anything about Richard Branson right now and you'll get 55,000 views. And then I'll write something like, you know, how not to sleepwalk yourself into mental illness, which I have some background in, and I'll get 5 views type of thing. So,
but that type of content, though, is depending when you release it. So if you release that on Mental Health Day, when everyone's aware of it, you might get 5,000 views. But you were right. It's finding something that people are going to... And that's the problem with marketing. Like you say, I've put a post out for... weeks ago I put a post out saying about supporting small businesses and they got something like 150,000 views, and that's because it triggered at the moment of which the government is saying, right, we're all going on lockdown and you're all going to lose a lot of money. Apologies, my phone's gone off in the background here. And that is basically kind of how marketing kind of works. You've got to ride a wave at that moment in time. So I kind of call it, there's two types of marketing. There's passive marketing and there's active marketing. And the passive stuff is, like I said, answering questions that people may have. And then the active stuff is like social media, because it's fast moving, is being really kind of with the times. And you look at Sarah Potter, she's, in my humble opinion, Sarah Potter has done extremely well on social media because she's riding the wave of what's going on at that moment in time. She captures the thought processes and the way that people think and the way that people kind of react on social media, and she plays to that. But what you're doing, you're not having an opinion about Richard Branson or having an opinion about COVID-19. As long as it's a good opinion and people understand it, they won't remember you for that. They'll remember you for having good opinions. And that's the point of marketing, to stay in people's minds. And you need both the active and passive, in my humble opinion.
Yeah, definitely. Sarah's another Guinness or genius.
Guinness, yeah.
She's definitely. And her whole team, the two others that work on
Tim,
those projects.
Tim and Kira, yeah. I'm weirdly enough really good friends with those guys as well. I mean, Tim will go a separate podcast talking about science fiction, but that's for another time. I won't plug it just now. But apologies with my phone in the background going off all the time. Yes, so it's a strange one. It really is a strange one. It's one of those things that you've got to work with and understand. And there's a lot of recruitment companies out there, I think personally, that have missed the boat completely on marketing and have focused way too much on the wrong part of marketing, which is just one element, which is cold calls. And they need to kind of come to terms with the fact that it's not just about cold calls. It's more now. It's the future of marketing in recruitment is a big broad band of thoughts and ideas and visibility at the same time.
Yeah, and I think the cold call thing also, well, just with one thing to cap off on what I said, I think the best marketing is the marketing that keeps testing.
Yes.
Testing for what works. And that's where Sarah is really good. She's not afraid to test things. And I think that's why she gets as many wins as she does, because she's not afraid to test things. New things, and she's also not afraid to be a bit edgy. I mean, let's be honest, their stuff is quite, you know, quite edgy, people hate. And I'm in the love camp, you know. When you get to, I'm 52, and I think probably I'll get a bit old and crabby and cynical some days. But their content, I want to, you know, I follow that content because I like it, and it stimulates brain cells.
It's amazing how you get people following you, which are not relevant to what you do, but yeah, they follow you because they enjoy what you do. And that, I think, is the win, in my humble opinion, because then they're going to go and tell 10 other people about you. So yeah, it's a strange one. And Mark Gaisford is another good one, another genius, or Guinness.
I think he is. Very, 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 very good style. Very, very humorous. And going just back on the thing I want to say about cold calling is, I'd love everybody to move out of cold calling because it just then makes cold calling easier. So, but you know, please leave cold calling as soon as humanly possible, because then it would, you know, the four or five people left in cold calling, they'll just have a field day. But yeah, no, cold calling's got its place. It used to be the only thing that you could do. It used to be the only thing that you could be measured by. For sure, if it's the only thing you're doing now and it's the only thing you're measured by, then you're not going to be in business for very long. Either because it won't serve your whole needs, or two, you'll just burn people out, because cold calling is a high burn methodology, because none of us like to be told no. And if you make 100 cold calls, you could get told no 99 times. That's a lot of negativity.
The public's got a stigma about cold calling now, and that's the big, big issue with it, isn't it? Because it's, you know, a lot of sales trainers will tell you, oh no, ignore that, ignore this, ignore that, don't do that, you know, and you're thinking, well, it's now a tool as a part of a wider spectrum of methodology doing marketing. And if you don't have that as a part of the, you know, other parts, other elements, like where'd you find, generate the leads? Where'd you find these people? You can't just pick up the yellow pages anymore, because most of the time yellow pages doesn't exist in some places. So there's a lot of more science, I think, to sales and marketing now than has ever been. Would you say?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, again, the people, it's about getting feedback. Whenever I build websites now and somebody says to me, you know, you haven't made anything that I like the look of in your portfolio, but I trust your features, or I trust the recommendation that I've been given. Yeah. And I go, well, you know, whenever we build a bespoke website for somebody, if you're buying one of our off-the-shelf ones, they're just off-the-shelf and they're there for a reason. If we do a bespoke project, and the first thing that we ask our clients to do is tell us what their vision is for their website. And then we ask them, can you ask these survey questions about your website from your clients and your candidates? And then can we triage those three opinions together and see whether they actually meet the needs of the people that you're looking to use your website? Because a lot of times with websites, you can create things in your own image, and then a client will come along and a candidate will come along and think, you know, what's that? And I think it's the same thing with the... with the marketing, if we are now in the place where millennials are decision makers, we should be asking millennials, do they want to be cold called or not? Because they're the best people. If they're in the decision making seat now, if they're the age range, we should be asking, are you happy with a cold call? Are you happy with a blog? Are you happy with a mail shot? You know, in the same way that I ask, you know, my customers, you know, we run the questionnaires for them if they want us to. And we say, you know, would you be happy with a salary survey tool as being a future connection? And we keep getting high scores on that, saying yes. The moment those high scores of a salary survey start to tail off, then we would question whether that should be pushed to the forefront of, you know, a user journey, for argument's sake. So I think, coming back to what I was saying about testing of marketing, testing of marketing isn't just put this really outrageous thing out there and see if anybody responds, or I can light up LinkedIn or Facebook or Twitter.
Yes.
It's to go talk to your audience and say, you know, what do you think this will work? Do you think this will, you know, would you be happy with that? Is that a way you want to receive information stuff? Again, we've seen, you know, we've seen a resurgence of people being mailed at their homes working. I mean, I can remember a time when you used to get a brass plaque put on your front door saying no, you know, no free newspapers or no marketing material type of thing. In some marketplaces, you know, domestic mail is making a comeback.
Yeah, a podcast before this, an old friend of mine I did, and she does graphic design for the print world. So basically anything printed, she does the graphic design for. And she was saying that mailers and like physical cards and physical pieces of paper and banners and stuff like that now has gone through the roof. It's that kind of print marketing seems to be coming back into vogue. Where it never used to. And I think that could be because of GDPR. Because GDPR has restricted mail lists, so you're not getting out as much information electronically anymore. So now people are going back to billboards and, you know what I mean, putting it on the side of a car or wherever it is, inside of a van. So yeah, there's something in that, isn't it?
It is. And GDPR, it reminds me of the old John Smith adverts. With that famous
Peter Kay.
And he's at the Indian restaurant, and it's a call from Kylie, his daughter, and it's like, and he's like trying to calm her down and going, oh, you know, there's no such thing as the bogeyman. It's not the bogeyman that you've got to be worried about. It's the burglars.
Went in through the window. That was it. Yeah.
And the whole time GDPR was a thing, a couple of years, you know, it blew up a couple of years. Obviously, it was 2016, but it got really noisy couple of years ago, as we started to face the dreaded implementation of it. And I'm like, it's not the the GDPR that you need to be worried about, it's the e-privacy. Now, fortunately, e-privacy didn't get implemented at the same time in its original format, but it's still on the test bench, and, you know, still waiting to be implemented. And if e-privacy comes in the original written format, there's some very, 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 very excited people who basically think it's going to shut down all marketing, cold approaches, emailing, full stop. And some of the wording that was in the e-privacy legislation was quite scary.
Yeah, I remember this. Yeah.
So I think print marketing did have some of that. And then again, coming back to, well, if you can't print, then you need to engage, and that's where the inbound stuff comes from. You've got to engage in online channels and get the inbound. So.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's the one thing, social media and GDPR kind of, social media then will accelerate even further. And then if you can get people's authorizations to email them off social media, then you go in that direction. Just one thing I want to ask you, and before we go, is there was a lot of talk about bots on websites. Has that died a death now? Have we all moved away from bots?
There's some really clever stuff that's come into the market recently that I think could be really useful with a bot. I like the bots that are able to interrogate your applicant tracking system. Like, there's a few bots out there now where the customer journey can be, they can come onto your website and they can say, you know, if I'm the employer, you can say, you know, go down the employer path and, you know, what are you looking to achieve today? Are you looking to hire people? What are you looking to hire type of thing? And again, you can put in two or three criteria, and it can make an instant, it can go and talk to your Bullhorn system, or it can go and talk to your Vincere system or Vincere or however you say it. It's good product, that one. I like that one. But it can talk in real time to your database and say, oh yeah, we've got three of those. Would you like to speak to a recruiter about them now? I think that's really quite cool. In terms of its functionality, the thing is, again, coming back to testing.
Yeah,
there's some really cheap tools out there. Like, there's a one which is like, I misquoted the price of it, but I think it's like $19 a month, so 17, 16 quid. And then there's other ones out there for £150 a month. So I say to all my clients, look, you know, rather than test the £150 a month one, test the, you know, the low dollar one and see if you get engagement from it. And then if you do, then develop from there. But I think the main problem I see with the bot is LinkedIn screams loud and clear from the candidate audience, at least. We want to talk to real people. We want to talk to real people.
Yes.
And all the growth in the recruitment space that I've seen is from one or two people starting up recruitment companies after leaving medium-sized to large recruitment companies, right?
Yeah.
Because they want to deliver a more personal service. So yeah. I think they kind of defeat the object in that, you know, like, would you, I'd rather speak to Mark than I would speak to your bot.
Yeah.
That sounds wrong. Because you're the service provider. So I think for the 8,000 startups that are one or two people startups that have happened every year for the last couple of years, technology is the last thing that they should be thinking about, because their USP is them. And their openness and their availability. But I think if you're a Randstad or an Adecco or a Hays, I think that technology could be useful from a admin filtering point of view. If you're a specialist agency, like you're a 4 or 5 person data science agency and you've got very well-groomed candidate data, then it could be used in the way that I said, as an innovative way of tempting clients to use you.
Yeah.
Try you out. In terms of dying the death, everything dies a death because everything is overhyped.
Yeah.
You know?
I noticed it on LinkedIn where no one talks about it anymore. And I'm just wondering if it still exists.
Yeah. I mean, these technologies still exist. They're still used. And then and each one of us is on a different crest of, I mean, you're at the leading edge of this information. There were people who, you know, and I think bots have been, you know, being pushed heavily for a couple of years now, haven't they? 2-3 years. But yeah, I mean, and it comes back to maybe rounding off one of the answers that I gave before, have websites changed really not? The hype, there's a lot of hype about features and functions, but there's not a lot of change other than design and content. And design and content is the easiest bit to apply to a website. So the future is bright, you know, in terms of stabilizing what technology you need to invest in and what you need to buy.
Yeah.
But in terms of new technologies that come along, it's always best to let the hype settle. I mean, we're a bit neurosive at times. You know, we're like, oh, well, so-and-so's just got a bot. We must have one. Like, whoa, yeah. You know, just slow down. You know, yeah. Ask 100 candidates whether they want to use a bot. That's a good place to start. Because if they don't want to use it, what's the point? Even at, you know, $19.99 a month, what's the point in putting it on there if you ask 100 of your candidates, would you use a bot and what would you use it for? And the bot can't do that. And you've just wasted $19 or £150 a month.
Yeah, it's weird, isn't it? It's absolutely weird. Well, thank you, Darren. It's been absolutely insightful with regards to kind of what websites do. I think some people, for myself, I'm kind of a little au fait with some websites, but for some people it's a daunting task at this moment in time where to go and what to do, and the first thing they do is end up on Wix and create some sort of random thing, don't they? That's what tends to happen. But no, thank you for your information. Where can people find you? What's your website? What is your website to your business?
It is recruiterweb.co.uk. It's a highly original, out there marketing, recruiters and web, recruiterweb.co.uk. And LinkedIn is the best way to get started. I mean, obviously, if you want to speak to me, pick up the phone. But I'm open to talk to people on LinkedIn as a channel. I really like the channel. So, yeah, that's us. That's where you can find us. And I'd be more than happy to tell you what I can.
Awesome. Well, thank you very much, mate. And good luck with everything. And hope you're staying safe as well in these weird times, in these unprecedented times at the moment.
I'm really pleased. I mean, thank you very much for having me on and listening to my witterings. It's, you know, I think, as I say, people should follow you. They should do more of this with you. You certainly know what you're talking about. You've stretched me over the years that we've been communicating in subjects. So it's it's a very typical thing And thanks for having me on.
I think it's insanity, not genius, by the way. But thank you very much for those kind words, mate. Really, really, thank you. Thank you very much. So yeah, speak to you soon. Take it easy, mate. Bye-bye.
Thanks. Bye.
Oh, I really hope you enjoyed that, because I really did. Darren's an awesome guy. I've known him for a few years now. He knows his stuff about websites, and especially recruitment websites. So please reach out to him. Have a chat with him. He's a lovely guy. Connect with him. He's got some great information on LinkedIn. He talks about some really sensible stuff as well on LinkedIn. So he's definitely one to reach out to and get to know. And that's it for this week. I hope you enjoyed this episode, and I'll speak to you soon. Take care. Bye-bye.